Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live from the Rapid City studios for SDPB today. We're kicking off the show with political junkies Seth Tupper and Kevin Wooster. They're both here in the studio. Kevin Wooster is with Kello TV's Rapid City Bureau. Kevin, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Oh, it's so good to be here and see all Charles Michael Ray's awards.
And Seth Tupper is a Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter. Seth, welcome as well.
Thank you.
Let's start with the big announcement yesterday, $300,000 in grant money coming. Seth, do you want to kick that off and let us know what that's all about?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about what it's all about, but you know, it's a continuing effort, I think, by the Dugard administration to limit the number of people that are going into the state prisons and focus on mental health and addiction and those kinds of issues and try to keep people from filling up the prisons and building more prisons. And just as an aside, what interests me about it is the Helmsley Foundation has a South Dakota connection that a lot of people may not know or have forgotten. When Leona Helmsley died, when I was in Mitchell, we found out, much to our surprise, that her grandson, Walt Panzer, was living in Mitchell and had been a Mitchell police officer. Since then, he's been appointed to the Helmsley Foundation board. And he has directed a lot of money to, I assume has helped direct a lot of money to South Dakota for efforts like this from the foundation. So this kind of continues his devotion to South Dakota causes.
And where would he be based out of now?
That's a good question. I think he's based out of multiple places now, having inherited some money from the Helmsley, from Leona Helmsley. So I think he has multiple bases of operation at this point.
Kevin, any thoughts on that and mental health and how that's going to affect criminal justice reform in the state?
Well, it's a lot of it is, to me, the conservative progressive philosophy of Dennis Dugard, which you see in so many areas, and part of his reworking of the juvenile corrections, of the adult corrections, big projects, things that he's done, and I think are all legacy building things that aggravate some of the conservatives, surprise some of the progressives. And really is, we're still trying to define him as a politician, I think, this far into his second term. And I don't think he's done yet. I think he's got some surprises yet. These are things that he thinks save money and also maybe save people. So
is the idea of investing so much in mental health initiatives a new conversation, or is this something that has come up before?
Well, I think it's come up before. I don't think you'll find a better listener than Dennis Dugard in terms of, he's got a small ego and he's willing to let other people give him ideas and embrace those ideas and maybe work with them a little bit. He listens well. And I mean, it certainly makes sense to front end load these things with mental health issues, with education issues, with those kinds of things. He would argue, I think, that all of these things are designed to save money in the end, because it's cheaper to do things in the long run this way.
Is he going to get the kind of support? I mean, obviously that's money that's coming from a foundation, not from taxpayers' dollars, so better chances at getting support for some of those initiatives then?
I would think so. But he obviously he's proven he's not shy about asking for public money either on things, from roads to sales tax increases for teachers. And so I don't know where all this is going. I would guess there's a couple of more initiatives that we haven't seen yet from him.
Seth, do you want to talk a little bit about, we were going to kind of talk about it later in the show, but criminal justice reform, you did a four-part series for the Rapid City Journal, which was excellent. Sheriff Kevin Tome is coming here in a little bit to talk about some grant money they're searching. Did you see mental health as being a component in the reform issues in Pennington County?
Absolutely. Sheriff Tome was part of the advisory group that helped Governor Dugard formulate the criminal justice reforms that were passed in recent years. And I think this is a natural sort of extension of that philosophy down to the local municipal and county jail level. And there is a mental health component to it. I mean, one of the aims of what Sheriff Tome is trying to do with grant money from the MacArthur Foundation, if he gets it, is to sort of direct people into places that might be more appropriate than jail, if they're dealing with mental health issues, if they're dealing with addiction issues, that kind of thing. He points out that it's about $80 a day per inmate to house somebody in the county jail. It can be more expensive than that if they go through withdrawal, if they need treatment, if they need medical care. And so he thinks there's as Kevin said with Governor Dugard, I think Sheriff Tome also believes there's more cost-effective methods of dealing with those kinds of inmates.
So let's go back to this idea of conservative, progressive, do guard. Some people are saying, you know, they might not come back to Peer because of how things went this year. Let's talk about the upcoming primaries and sort of transition to that conversation. Are people saying that it's too conservative or too progressive or liberal of a place to come back to?
Well, there's certainly some people saying that. There's been a split between the Republican main guard in South Dakota and the hard right for a long time. Certainly 10 or 15 years that's been going on, and it seems to be getting more pointed and more bristly now. People that think that they were bulldozed by the Dugard administration, the Sesson, just don't know anything about the Bill Janklow administration. I mean, seriously, give me a break. But he certainly went after some things. And what happens typically, and this is nothing new in the legislature, you lose, so you're mad about it. You come into Peer and think that you represent something that is perhaps bigger than it is. And I would argue that Dugard, for his strengths and weaknesses, is closer to what most South Dakotans, and certainly most South Dakota Republicans, want on most issues, not all, than a lot of these folks that are what I would call, you know, the hard right of the party. They have their place, and they speak for a group that has a powerful emotion and strong convictions. But you don't just get to come over and you don't get to come into Peer and get everything you want just because some people in your district told you that's what the state needs. So,
some folks are running that have caused a little dust up in your neck of the woods. Seth, do you want to tell us about those primaries?
Sure. One of the primary sort of hard right conservatives that's not running this year is Betty Olson from West River, who's been in the mix in a lot of those battles that Kevin talked about between the sort of the old guard Republicans and the more conservative Republicans. And out here also, Brian Gosch appears not to be running. He's term limited in the House. He'd have to run for the Senate. He was the majority leader. He was in the midst of a lot of battles this session over education funding, opposed that, and saw his own House members pass it over his objections as a majority leader. One of the other interesting races out here is shaping up between Senator Bruce Rampelberg and Representative Lance Russell, with Bruce Rampelberg being an incumbent senator who probably fits more of the mold of the moderate establishment type Republican, Lance Russell being more of a kind of a maverick. Lance Russell's term limited in the House, and he's going to run for Senate against Rampelberg. And so we have quite a few. And then there are quite a few districts out here where there are three, four, or five Republicans running in a primary for the two nominations for a House seat. And it looks to me, and I hope to explore this further, but it looks to me like many of those people are more of the hard right conservative types who are kind of maybe a second wave looking to replace some of the people that are leaving this year.
Now, Secretary Krebs is announcing enough signatures for a new party, the Constitutional Party. Do we know anything about that yet? Or is that kind of a brand new?
Did the Constitutional Party, did they drop off because they didn't have enough for a while? I mean, they were around for a while and then they...
Apparently, I saw the news release just this morning, and that was my reaction, was new is a relative term in this case, because they've had candidates on statewide ballots, and I'm guessing, haven't had a chance to look into it, but that they just dropped below the necessary threshold of signatures or members or whatever, and now are back, and maybe that means they'll have candidates. I mean, they've had candidates for governor before that have been on the ballot, and so maybe we'll see candidates this time or in the future, I guess.
So right now there isn't anyone from that?
I don't know, and it's only just been a few years ago that happened, I think, because I was disappointed because Constitutional Party is the next party I plan to belong to. I'm a Libertarian now, and I've been a Democrat, Republican, and Independent. So
you get one to check off the list.
But the last time I looked, they had like 250 members in South Dakota or something.
So is that an option for filling some legislative seats that have been vacated?
I wouldn't think so. I think the... I think the Democrats are an option for filling some of those seats. Apparently, they've got more people running in some of the districts than they've had for a while. And, they've certainly got a long way to go in that regard. So hopefully, I say hopefully because I believe hopefully it's more fun to cover when it's better balanced, and I think it's just better government when there's some degree of balance.
Let's talk about national politics a little bit, and because we just love to talk about John Thune.
Can't get enough Thune talk.
Can't get enough John Thune talk. And the possibility as we inch closer to this, maybe contested convention, Seth, you wrote something in the journal that was just fun to read and interesting, so give us a theory.
Yeah, it was a reaction to, I had seen a couple weeks ago, former House Speaker John Boehner had told some reporters that, you know, if it goes to a contested convention, we ought to just throw Paul Ryan's name into the mix and nominate him. Mm-hmm. If everybody else who's a declared candidate can't win the nomination and they had their fair chance, then let's pick somebody else, seemed to be the theory. And so that made me think, well, if this goes into a contested convention and people's names are just being thrown out on the second, third, and subsequent ballots, it wouldn't take long, I wouldn't think, for Thune's name to pop up. He's the third-ranking Republican in the Senate. He's a guy with a national reputation and a guy who, theoretically at least, would be palatable to a broad range of Republicans. Mm-hmm. And, it's probably unlikely that Thune would run for president. He's talked about it. He's considered it in the past, and he's not done it because of the significant challenges of raising money from South Dakota and all of that. So that's what made me write this column, sort of half in jest and half in seriousness, is that if it's ever going to happen, this would probably be the one opportunity for him to seize. It's probably unlikely, but at the same time, this year, unlikely doesn't seem to mean anything. So who knows? But it's fun to think about, fun to kick around, and if it does go to an open convention, I think his chances would be right up there with anybody.
So. Kevin, you want to talk John Thune for a few minutes and open convention possibilities?
Well, Thune was openly discussed as a possibility in 2008 when he was only 4 years into his first Senate term, mm-hmm. and he was discussed, and he was a friend of McCain's, close to McCain. And which would have been a much better vice president pick than the one they had. But then he came up again in 2012. And I've got a Democratic friend that's been around politics and was a staffer for a Democratic politician on the national level who's been saying for years, when the Republicans finally wake up, they're going to realize that John Thune's their strongest presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. And I think he is awfully strong. I just never sense the desire in him to do all that you have to do and make all the changes and affect your family the way you have to affect your family for a shot at that. In 2012, I remember he said, people say, why aren't you running this year? You'd be right there. And he said, yeah, right there. I could spend a few million dollars and finish third in the Iowa caucus. And, because you got to be so conservative and you got to find such a niche in that primary run. He likes to come home and watch basketball games and go pheasant hunting and play golf with his dad when he can get away from the Senate. And your life changes. Everything leaves when you even run. Even if you don't win, everything changes.
You called it almost a pathological desire that you need to get to that highest office.
I think I may have undersold that. I think it is pathological now that I think about it. Yeah. And I have not sensed that he's willing to make the kind of sacrifices to even just be a player, not because you may not win.
Sure.
And you still suffer a lot, and your family suffers a lot in the process.
Yeah. How's the Paula Hawks, Kristi Noem, working? Starting to look like we're hearing more from Paula Hawks now. She was on Dakota Midday and came and talked about some of her ideas. Are we hearing more? Is this a legitimate contender for that seat?
Well, I think she's a legitimate candidate, and mm-hmm. I certainly think she's somebody that can represent the Democratic Party well, unlike the last person they had, who, bless her heart, Karina Robinson, just didn't do very much and was not really, in my mind, a serious challenger. And I think Paula Hawks is. I think she's got a strong background. I think she defines issues pretty well. And I think she will represent the party proudly.
Anything that you've been noticing about that race?
It's been pretty low profile so far. I think, the trouble for Democrats in South Dakota always is if you have a Republican incumbent who's pretty well liked, as Kristi Noem seems to be, the onus is on the Democrat to do something that's going to pierce through and catch people's attention. And that's very difficult to do. And if you don't, you'll just end up being, a legitimate candidate and a contender, but with a disadvantage in registration numbers that is very difficult to overcome. So she's going to have to raise the profile of the race somehow. And remains to be seen, I guess, how she could do that.
Sad reality for a Democratic candidate in a race like this is the difference between a really legitimate, really good candidate and one who isn't might be 7 percentage points. I mean, you might be losing 30, you might get 35 or 36% as opposed to 29 or 30 or 38%. I mean, that's the sad reality they face. I'm not saying she can't do better than that, but it's tough.
So when does Kristi Noem become someone we talk about as a potential national candidate as for vice president or something? We always throw around John Thune. When does Kristi Noem become someone we say, hey, what about Kristi Noem? She's looking pretty good in the party.
Well, Trump probably needs, with his problems with women voters, he probably needs, probably would benefit from a strong woman as a running mate. Huh. Whether that would be Kristi Noem, you know, who knows? Remains to be seen. And I like John Thune. I don't know if she's interested in something like that. Obviously, she still has a husband and family back in South Dakota, comes home an awful lot. So whether she would be ready to jump into any kind of national political role, I'm not sure. And then, of course, she's been rumored to maybe be interested in running for governor in the future. So, but again, anybody on a national ticket, for example, could do a lot worse than picking her as a running mate. That's for sure.
Yeah, it may be a little soon for her. I know she's been building a base out there and getting known. I'll be surprised if she's not on the Republican primary ballot for governor in 2018.
Sure. So, Kevin, you want to talk a little bit about yesterday's events at the Michael J. Fitzmaurice State Home for Veterans? You were out there. Any comments that you picked up from Hot Springs you want to share?
Well, Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels, or as he called himself, Lieutenant Governor stand-in, because he stood in for Governor Dugard. Apparently there was some weather, and Governor Dugard was a little bit under the weather himself. So Michael stood in, and of course he's always good and entertaining. But he went through the summary of this $43 million facility, which doesn't serve a great number of people, around 100 beds, mixed between nursing home and residential. But a wonderful event, a lot of veterans there. Of course, one of our two living Medal of Honor winners was there. Michael J. Fitzmaurice was there, and we spoke to him. But they went through such an ordeal to go through this thing with the VA rejecting a design and them not initially qualifying for a $23 million grant, which is crucial to this, and then them getting qualified, and then the design didn't fit, and then the bids came in $10 million over, and then they had to go back to the drawing board and work with the art. You know, it's just one thing after another, and Lieutenant Governor claimed yesterday they came in ahead of schedule and under budget, so, and I haven't had a chance to double check that. I guess Seth will. I'm going to leave that up to him.
I know she said claimed, so.
I assume he's telling the truth.
And there was that moment where he said, you know, that they changed the rules sort of midstream, the feds did. And he just said, can they do
went,
that?
Huh? Yeah, they can do that. He learned a lot about the VA and a lot about those things. And he also talked a little bit yesterday about why keep that investment in Hot Springs? Why not take it to a bigger community? And he said 127 years here. It's a community that's committed to vets. Whatever the VA does, there's going to be, the federal VA does, there's going to be a health care facility of some kind there, and we want our home there. So,
Kevin Wooster is with Calo TV's Rapid City Bureau. Kevin, thank you for joining us today.
Sure.
Seth Tupper, Enterprise Reporter for Rapid City Journal. Thank you as well, Seth.
You're welcome.